Welcome to Brain Health Matters. I'm your host, Kate Kunkel, the founder of this series of courses, programs, books, and this podcast, all created to help you become healthier so your brain can become happier and stronger. Brain Health Matters is brought to you by Don't Let the Memories Fade, a holistic approach to preventing dementia and creating a healthier, more vibrant future. You'll find it on Amazon everywhere. Hello and welcome to Brain Health Matters. I'm your host, Kate Kunkel, and we're here in on the last week of the heart healing theme for 2022. We're joined by Carol March, who's going to share with us ways to heal our traumatized hearts and minds, because we certainly cannot have a healthy brain with a broken heart. Carol March is an author, book coach, and storyteller, and she helps people heal from trauma through journaling. Her amazing story of commuting with spirit to heal her own trauma is the subject of her latest book, When Spirit Whispers. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be able to talk to your audience.
Now, Carol, I've read quite a bit of your book, and your story of healing from trauma through spirit is quite amazing.
Well, I don't know if it's amazing. It didn't seem amazing to me because it took a long time. But looking back on it, I do see that I was able to take control of my life at certain important junctures and make the changes that needed to happen. And usually those changes were I was pushed into those changes by my experiences with spirit. So it was spirit that would nudge me along. And I didn't always realize that at the time. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But for example, when I moved to, out of Philadelphia, moved to California, that was a big spiritual shift for me. And then moving from there to here, to New Mexico, that was another one where I needed to be around, be in a more emotional place and be with more emotionally based people, because California is very mental and very yes. spiritual and very exciting and very wonderful. But I was also trying to integrate my emotional presence into my spiritual presence. So I needed to be in a different place.
And Albuquerque is definitely the place for that. I love it there. It's so beautiful. So we've talked about different kinds of trauma here on Brain Health Matters, but mostly like traumatic brain injury. So something that actually physically hurts the body. But when you talk about trauma as something that we must heal, what kind of trauma are you talking about?
Right, exactly. Well, I'm talking about emotional and psychological trauma. Now, that can be accompanied by physical trauma in some cases, but in my case, I don't believe it was. And I didn't know about trauma. I didn't know that what had happened to me until I was at midlife. I found out that I had been sexually abused by my father. Before the age of three. And although I had suspected that, I didn't know it until I was experiencing some body work. I work with a body worker. Mm-hmm. And the memories were in the muscles. They were physically in my body. They were not in my brain. They were not in my mind. Because I was so young, I hadn't formed the pictures yet, developmentally. So I knew that it happened. And that actually made a lot of sense of all the other problems I'd had from early childhood, because I was a problem child in the sense of I was so shy, I couldn't speak to people. I was very anxious as a very young child, 4 or 5 years old. I experienced major anxiety, depression, incredible shyness. I mean, they called it shyness back then. Today they would treat somebody who had what I had, because I really could not focus on other people. And I was just in terror. I was literally living in terror. And as I grew older, I adjusted and I grew up and, whatever. But I always had anxiety. I was always afraid. And it would come as literally symptoms of anxiety attacks, panic attacks, things of that nature. And so the approach was, there's something wrong with Carol. That was my family's approach. And that was society's approach at that time, because trauma was not something that was discussed. And so I've spent much of my life, you know, I studied psychology. I mean, I've got a master's degree. I worked in social service. I always wanted to help people and did that kind of work. But there was always, I was trying to figure out what the heck was wrong with me and how could I fix it? So much of my life was motivated toward healing in that respect because I thought there was something wrong with me. The big shift I made when I realized what trauma meant psychologically, the way it's being written about today, and of course it's out of the closet and it's everywhere now, is that it was what happened to me as a really young child influenced everything. The reason I was having all these problems was not that there was something really wrong with me, it was the result of the trauma. It was the result of the patterns of behavior and the changes in the brain that happen when a very young child is traumatized like that.
So I want to interrupt here for a moment and just talk about the actual physical changes that happen, yeah. Because Carol's mentioned, you know, we have these emotional and things come up and we don't even know why they're coming up. But that's partly because, and not only because, there are actual changes that go on inside the physical brain. So there's three parts of the brain. And I think it's important for people to understand, because when you feel like you just can't overcome this, and it happens the same with addictions, there are actual physical parts of the brain that are changed. And there are things that we can do to help reverse the damage, so to speak, to those physical parts of the brain. One of them is the amygdala. And that's the emotional response in our brain. That's where we react to things. And we can actually see in brain scans that if somebody has been traumatized in their life, that this part of the brain becomes hyperactive. So when you're faced with some other event or trauma, then it will actually like light up like a Christmas tree. And that part of your brain is affected. Even if you are emotionally, you feel like you're dealing with it well, and you may be on the surface dealing with it well. Another part of the brain that we're so concerned about here at Brain Health Matters is the hippocampus. That's where we remember and we learn things. That's the part of the brain. But trauma can actually reduce the size and functioning. So that's why people with trauma have some trouble remembering things, that the why there may be learning difficulties. All of those things can be impacted by trauma and destruction of parts of the hippocampus or shrinking of the hippocampus. And the final one, I want to just get this through, is the prefrontal cortex. And it's associated with executive functioning, is where we make decisions and make plans. So if you've been traumatized, that part of your brain, the function is reduced. And so that might explain some of the issues that people with a traumatic background, PTSD, for example, would have. Carol, I bet you experienced many of those symptoms yourself.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the anxiety that I suffered from most of my life is an amygdala issue. It's the issue of being afraid of things for no reason. They called it free-floating anxiety when I was a teenager, when I was in therapy as a teenager. Well, why do you have free-floating anxiety? Well, who knows, you know? And I would actually perceive it at that time as being, I don't mean it to be overly dramatic, but it was like I was being attacked by things that I couldn't see. You know what I'm saying? That's what it felt like. Now, I knew that there was nothing there. And I my other part of my brain said, that's not what's happening. But that's what it felt like. But I would have anxiety so bad, even in my 20s, where I would stay home from work and stay in bed for 4 or 5 days until it passed, because I was hysterical with anxiety.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really very severe.
So would something specific trigger that for you? Because there are probably other people who are listening to this and they're saying, wow, I feel that sometimes, but I don't even really know what's triggering it. Did you always know what triggered it, or did it just
I did not know. And even looking back on it, I don't know that I could, I mean, I'm sure there was, but what it was, I didn't know. It seemed to be, and I was in my 20s, you know, when I was in my 20s, I didn't understand that things were connected.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly did, and I don't think that's an uncommon thing because you're not completely adult at that point, but it didn't seem, everything seemed random to me. Things would happen randomly. And that was one of my things that happened randomly. So it would happen fairly regularly, and there I would be, and then it would be over. So it was like, you know, just having a cold for 5 days and you had to stay home. Only I was in abject terror with it. And I will share with you, because I was thinking this morning about this, many years later, when I lived in California, I used to walk at Fort Funston in San Francisco, which is a very beautiful place overlooking the Pacific Ocean. I mean, it's just gorgeous. Hang gliders go there, and it's a lovely place to walk. And I was walking there one day, and I felt the panic attack starting, and it felt like a dark cloud would descend over me. And I was, you know, I had been dealing with this my whole life, and I got really angry. And I remember walking along that cliff and saying, okay, whatever this thing is, and I knew it wasn't really a thing, but I was talking that way to myself, whatever this is, I'm going to let it have at me. And I got in the car, I went home, I got into bed, I pulled the covers over my head, and I said, come and get me. Come and get me, anxiety. Kill me. I'm willing to die.
Wow.
And the anxiety came, and it lasted about 30 minutes, and then it disappeared, and I never had it again.
Wow.
Not that I didn't have anxiety after that, but I never had those kinds of overwhelming, horrible panic attacks again. And I don't know what, you know, obviously spirit had a hand in that. I wasn't aware of it, but looking back on it, it was surrender.
Right. Instead of just letting go, you're not fighting it.
Right. And letting go. And that's part of what healing the heart is about, is surrendering to the power of spirit, however you envision that, and surrendering to the power of your own heart to be able to handle and to heal what happens to us. So that's, I think, an important issue. And what happened to my amygdala as a result of that, I couldn't tell you. I've never had a brain scan or anything like that. You can't tell. But I never had that kind of thing happen again. And I've done that on other occasions with difficult things that happen. I just said, that's it. We're not doing it anymore.
Good for you.
There's a cognitive, there's a cognitive element to healing. I mean, and part of that to me is what the main issue is for anybody who's healing from anything. And that includes physical as well as emotional problems, is looking at how we are playing victim. And our whole society encourages us to be a victim of our upbringing, of our culture, of our income, of our genetics, you know, of our whatever, everything, our jobs, our partners, or lack of partners.
I've heard that, you know, I believe that in the last 20 years, maybe even as little as 10 years, it seems to be almost the slope that the society is traveling down, that the responsibility for your own destiny is being taken away, you know, in some perhaps misguided but lovely plan or hope, that by making people feel that it's not their fault or that somebody else is in control, they don't feel so bad about themselves. But on the other hand, not feeling bad about yourself can also take away any attempt or feeling that you can take control of what's happening in your life.
And it's not that we want people to feel bad about themselves, but we all need to realize that we're not completely in control of anything ever, but we have more control than we think we do.
Absolutely. It's even to do with our brain, our health.
Yeah.
So we have genetic stuff that can affect us. And our backgrounds when we're growing up, the foods we're given, the injections we are or not given, all of those things affect us. But bottom line, we have a lot of control. I'm very concerned that many people, as our society seems to be progressing, and I use that word very lightly, is that control, that empowerment is being taken away. So we have to grab it ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the whole wellness, you know, psychological wellness community, people that there's a lot of people doing it, and it's still somewhat fringy. I mean, I've been involved with it for a really long time, and it's much more out in the open now than it ever was. Certainly when I first started to meditate, it was very unusual to do meditation, except for the people that did the Eastern mantra meditation kind of thing. But to actually heal yourself with meditation or energy medicine was very unusual when I started way back in the day. And now it's everywhere.
Yes, thank goodness.
Everybody's doing something. And the whole, you know, all the different trauma therapies that have come up are using eye movements and using various somatic means of healing it. And so there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of work being done on how to help people who think they're blaming themselves. And that's one of the reasons I'm writing about it, because I blamed myself for not being better, not being stronger, not being able to overcome my difficulties, et cetera, et cetera. And to realize that so much of this was literally had been programmed into me because of what happened. And then all the other negative messages I got as a result of that, because I was the designated patient in the family, it changes you. And it's not my fault. And that's my message to other people, especially women, who are taking on maybe more blame than they need to. So we need to let go of the blame and start taking some power.
Was it spirit that guided you to sort of morph from the fiction? You're going to still obviously do fiction, but to write about this experience?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was nagging at me. And, you know, I'm not writing as a professional. I only have a master's degree. So I'm not a professional psychologist. I'm not a neuroscience or a doctor, any of those things. But I am a person who experienced these things. And so that's the position I take when I write. And when I got that opened the door for me. Mm-hmm. And what spirit actually said to me, because I do, when I journal, I am able to communicate directly with my inner self. And it's not unusual. Lots of people do it. I have been doing it for many, many years. And so I ask questions of my inner self, the part of me that is not my mental mind. And what I got was that my job was to tell of what I've experienced. And I thought, well, now that I can do. I can tell of what I've experienced. I'm not really telling other people what to do necessarily. I'm simply saying, this is what I did.
And that's so helpful, because really we need examples. That's how most of us lead, really, is by example. Right. It's not because we have all these degrees and fancy titles. It's because we've experienced things and have somehow overcome whatever it is. So when spirit comes to you or like gives you direction, do you hear anything? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've gotten to the point, and I've been practicing this for a long time. So, I mean, I did a heavy duty meditation school. You probably read that in the book, for 3 years in California. And I learned a lot. And that was the big shift in my coming out of being a victim and taking control of my life and understanding what healing is. And it turns out that doing energy healing is so much faster than doing therapy and counseling. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You can move way faster with it if you're willing to do that. So that was the beginning. And then a bit later, once I got to New Mexico, I've had very difficult relationships. And I was involved in a really difficult, well, not abusive, but difficult, psychologically difficult relationship. And I couldn't figure out why. What is going on? And I've always been a journaler, and I journal, you know, pretty much daily. And I finally said, I'm going to ask myself. Just for fun. I didn't know other people did it. I'd never read about it. I just did it. I said, what the heck is going on in this situation? And then I just sat with my hands on the keyboard and I waited. And then I typed whatever came up. And it was relevant. It wasn't brilliant, but it was relevant. And I thought, wow, this is a way to get in touch with that inner part in a way. And I'm a natural writer. So that made a lot of sense for me. And an artist, you know, would draw it. And it's, again, not uncommon. Lots of people do it. And it's a very, very good, easy, and inexpensive way. You don't need to take any training or learn anything, where you can literally get in touch with the part of you that is not your mental mind and get advice. The more I did it, the better it got, because in the beginning, mental mind was influencing and whatever. So the more I do it, the better it is. So I get information like that. I also hear and see. So when I do my meditation, if I'm having an issue, I'll say, may I please see a picture or an image about this issue? And something will come. And then it's up to me to interpret whatever that means. So then right. I get to work with an image.
So you think, you keep mentioning meditation. So I believe then what you're basically saying is that meditation is an important tool to have in your toolbox to be able to even tap into this. Otherwise, how do you close off the monkey mind if you don't do that?
Right. Well, and meditation has come out of the closet. I think mindfulness, which is a very neutral way of approaching meditation. There's no religion, there's no ideology. They don't ask you to believe in anything. So mindfulness is a good way to start it, because the point is, with anybody who's creative knows this, if you are stuck in mental mind, which goes in a rut and a circle and says the same thing over and over and over again, to be stuck in that makes it very difficult to tap into the creative part of the self, however you envision that. And so I think a lot of creative people are the ones that have gotten this before the general population. General population think of meditation as a way to reduce stress, which it does. It calms the body. It gets body and mind to be, working together as they're supposed to be, instead of mind going off on a tangent and body being left behind, so to speak, or body not being able to communicate to mind what's wrong or what its problem is or how it feels. What I've learned from research, and it's very interesting, is that meditation, yoga, and a particular type of journaling called writing for healing all have the same effects, and they're physiological effects that they got from MRIs on the brain. Mm-hmm. And they help to integrate the right and the left side of the brain. So you end up with better mental functioning, more ability to solve problems, to get out of the ruts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these methods do the same thing, which is to, calm down the chatter and get people to be more inner focused.
Right.
And when you have an inner focus, however you get there, it doesn't matter how you do it. You can do it by walking in nature and communing with a tree, however you do it is fine. But to get out of thinking that the outer world is the whole reality, I think, is what's important.
Oh, that's perfect, because the outer world is kind of messed up right now. It's better to go inside, I think.
I'm having a hard time staying in neutral with what's going on with the war. It's just so painful. Yeah. And all those people, it's very difficult to not be attached. But it's interesting, because I don't know if you've heard of Paul Levy. He's a writer, and he talks about the negative programming that we all have. And a lot of every spiritual practice talks about the negative inner voice, the critic, the judge, we all have that to some degree. And he talks about the way the shaman is, where you go into, so maybe I'm feeling scared and I go into the fear, and that's not easy to do, but you can do it. You can go into the fear and experience that fear, because until you experience it, it's hard to release it.
Yes.
It's hard to let it transform. And then you come back up and say, oh, I have shifted myself, shifted my body, shifted my brain by releasing my fear. And that's the way of the shaman. You go into it and then you come back out. And that's what's tricky about doing the work on your own. And that's why, for people, I recommend that they do find facilitators and therapists and, somebody who knows to facilitate the work. And I've had many helpers along the way to do the work, but it's so worth it.
Yes.
It's so worth it, Kate, because now at this point in my life, after being scared to death most of the time and not even realizing it, and now I'm joyful. Now I feel happy in my body. I mean, like in my body, just in my body.
I know. And that's so important. Yes. Joy, the feeling of joy. And Carol, this has been wonderful. And I'm so grateful for you to let yourself come out here and share all of this with the world, because it's hard, right? We tend to, like you said, being afraid and not feeling worthy, but I would love it if people would reach out to you and work with you or learn more from you. Certainly your journal, this workbook that you just came out with, is awesome. How can people learn more about you and get your books?
Well, I do have a website. It's carolhollandmarch.com. I write, my fiction is written under Carol Holland March, so that's what the website is. Okay. And I am very open to talking to people. I mean, my phone number, my email is on the website. My books are out on Amazon. I mean, I'm pretty available to people, to tell you the truth.
That's wonderful.
I do coach people who are wanting to work on this sort of thing. I mean, I'm not a therapist. I don't take that function. But if people are interested in discussing this sort of thing with me, especially around issues of creativity, then I do coaching and I do teach classes here in Albuquerque, and they're done on Zoom. So people can take them from anywhere if they wish to.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. So carolhollandmarch.com and all of your contact information. And I'm also going to put links to your books on the show notes.
Put my website down there. And I'm very happy to talk with anybody because I think the work is worth it, even though it can be difficult. It's worth it.
What a perfect way to end this, Carol. Yeah. It's worth it. You're worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Take good care. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to Brain Health Matters so you'll always have the latest information and access to interviews with experts who can help you nurture and protect your brain for a future filled with happy memories.